Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Learn more at alyeskapipeline.com.
It's been a challenging winter for many Alaskans. Long stretches of below zero temps, lots of snow in some parts of the state, little cover in other areas. This is a great time of year to take or plan a dream trip. What do you need to know about traveling out of the country right now? And if you decide to stick closer to home, what trip should you consider right here in Alaska? As spring gets closer, experts join us to detail travel possibilities today on Talk of Alaska.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, from Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. My grandson spent the winter working and having fun in Kona, Hawaii. I was envious of his barefoot beach adventures many times when it was 15 or 18 below in Anchorage, and I know it was much colder for friends in Fairbanks and the interior. How about you? Are you weary of winter and longing for an escape? Have you already made plans and are wondering if there could be delays because of current funding constraints with TSA? Maybe you've already been on a trip this winter and have tips to share for other Alaskan travelers. We know Alaskans love to wander remote areas of our state as well as take off for interesting places in the lower 48 and the world. Our guests today are experts in all things travel, both close to home and internationally. Scott McMurrin is the owner of Alaska Travelgram and helps Alaskans plan trips. Mandy Garcia is the owner of Salmonberry Travel and Tours, based in Anchorage. And Jack Bonney is the Vice President of Communications for Visit Anchorage. Welcome, all of you. Thanks for being here in the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's great to have company. All right. So to get us started off here, Scott, with, and also, in the interest of transparency here, the Alaska Travelgram is an underwriter for Alaska Public Media. I almost forgot to mention that. Scott, start us off. With Congress at an impasse regarding funding for the Department of Homeland Security, TSA agents are again calling in sick or needing to take other jobs because they're not getting paid. USA Today yesterday reported lines waiting for hours to get through security as spring break starts for many. Airports with long waits include Houston, New Orleans, Charlotte, Atlanta. What are you hearing about this currently, and how is it affecting travel as people are either leaving or getting ready to leave for spring break?
Well, it's a mess. And, you know, I mean, there's no other way to describe it. I haven't heard any big delays with respect to Anchorage or Fairbanks, but and I noticed that Seattle wasn't on the list, but it probably will be soon because Seattle's always a mess. Even with the new security clearance area all the way down to the left of the concourse, of the check-in area, it's always plugged up. So, you know, I don't know how I could possibly show up any earlier than 2 hours. Unless I missed my flight, then I'd change my behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have any other specific guidance except keep your eye on local media to find, I mean, people ask me today. It's like, what do I need to know before I got to the airport? And I said, well, I haven't heard anything. I was on the phone at the airport yesterday, and you know, no specific guidance. But, you know, that could change at the shift.
Mm-hmm. Mandy, your thoughts?
Well, we do operate year-round, so we've had a couple folks have some travel delays getting into Anchorage, but primarily it was weather in the lower 48. We haven't had significant delays or any delays between Anchorage and Fairbanks, which is really nice. I would say, though, one of my hot tips is to make sure you know the textable number for the airline that you're traveling with, because those customer service representatives can text you back really quickly rather than stand in line or wait on hold.
And how about you, Jack? What are you advising folks to do?
So good news so far, we haven't seen people have a lot of hiccups or speed bumps in their travel up here. I always think about, you know, regardless of the status of TSA or funding, I always watch the security lines and just think about traveling with compassion in general. For some people, this is the big trip. And that's maybe because it's Alaska, but also because not a lot of people travel the United States the way that we as Alaskans are used to. We're comfortable in airports. We have very nice ones. We're used to the idea that if we want to go someplace outside of our state, it's going to involve air travel. That's not the case for a lot of Americans. And so even in a good day, just remembering that it takes a little bit of extra time. Some people are going to be a little less familiar with the way that this works, even on a good day. And just being a little bit more thoughtful and compassionate and seeing other people as they travel. I think that's job one.
That's such an important point, because you're right. Alaskans are used to hauling tons of stuff everywhere and traveling all over the place. And it's kind of second nature, but for many people, as you say, it might be the big trip of their life, and maybe they've only been on a plane once or twice before that, if at all.
Truly.
Yeah. Before we discuss international travel concerns, oil prices are roiling because of the war in Iran. More than $100 a barrel yesterday. They kind of fell off, currently somewhere in the $80 barrel range. Is that yet starting to affect travel prices, plane tickets, lodging, anything? Are you seeing any uptick yet, or should we be expecting that soon? Who wants to take that?
Go ahead.
I would say as an operator, we already set our prices. So I'm not envisioning price changes unless something like dramatic were to happen. I saw that during maybe the last, maybe in 2020 and 2021, you saw some of the operators that are fuel dependent, like day boat companies, airplanes, helicopters, they had to do a fuel surcharge, fishing charters. So now there's a little disclaimer in each of those confirmations, if you book those directly, that says, hey, this could, you know, if it affects us, price could change due to fuel. But I don't envision it right now, and we haven't had any partners communicate any pricing changes.
I think what might be really interesting is we're kind of coming into this where you see the average American becoming more price sensitive in general, even before all of this started. And so the cost of things and price sensitivity and is right now a good time to travel was already something that was kind of on the radar. And I could make a guess at what high oil prices mean today and be dead wrong by the end of the week. It seems to be the way that this is going. The pace of change is so quick that it'd be tricky to speculate. I do think that it's worth being mindful that we're already in a place where a lot of people domestically are thinking about, is this the right time to spend? What we've seen so far, broadly speaking, is that people tend to prioritize travel. They say, if I have discretionary funding that I can use, I'm going to prioritize travel. And that's good, but I do wonder at what point do people say, ooh, I'm so worried about my own wallet or my own 401k that I change those habits. Mm-hmm. I think that keeps me up at night.
You know, when this Iran war broke out and oil prices spiked, I had three itineraries that I was working on for me. And, you know, I just said, you know, I'm going to pull the trigger on the quickest one because we could see things go haywire. In fact, lately, things have been going haywire pretty regularly. And what I do think is that our experience with COVID has desensitized us to a certain extent about mayhem. But, you know, so everybody makes their own judgment. But for my trips, I mean, I went out and bought it because
you were afraid it might go up.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Well, I think Scott brings up a really interesting point that those habits that some people kind of internalized during COVID have stuck with us. And some of the background forces that, you know, you had a bunch of vacation time saved up, or you couldn't travel and so you'd save some money to do so. You had a couple of years of like, let's go big, let's do that trip because I don't know when I'm going to do it again. And that has more or less tapered off. But I do think that for a lot of us, we've internalized the idea of like, yeah, I could do this trip that I've been thinking about. All I have to do is pull the trigger. And some of that, you know, COVID uncertainty of like, I got to go now because I'm not sure I'm going to be able to go later. We don't have that same urgency, but we've had this aha moment of like, no, actually the hardest part of this is like buying the ticket and getting off my couch sometimes.
Mandy, you wanted to jump in too?
Yeah, I was thinking about the booking window versus the planning window, and the planning window is far. We're seeing people still plan a year out. The booking window, when you actually say like, yes, let's do this, let's put the credit card down, let's make the reservations, has shortened significantly. So when you look at Alaskans enjoying Alaska in the summer, you know, it's actually kind of in our benefit as Alaskans because some of the travelers are also, I don't want to say waiting until the last minute, but, you know, that window has shortened. And typically Alaskan travelers that are traveling in state, that booking window, they make last minute plans. So I think that it's kind of leveled the playing field. You could probably get in the lodge that you wanted to stay
to
in this summer.
Up a little bit.
Yeah.
Interesting. And, you know, you were talking about the booking window. I always, I've heard people say, well, about 21 days before you want to fly is the sweet spot for getting the best deal on a ticket. What's your experience in that? When
21 days makes me so anxious. Like, as someone that will be on the other end of the phone to, like, help you with the lodging and the transportation and all of those pieces. And 21 days might be the best window for maybe air prices.
Yeah, I think that's what
but
they were talking
for
about.
Lodging and like getting bad. Exactly what you want. If you contacted us 21 days before you traveled and you had your heart set on X, whatever that is, like, I will tell you that might not be available.
Ah.
So if that experience is super important. I mean, at least, I don't know, at least buy it with miles and, you know, and or play the game at 3 weeks out, but secure your trip.
So you're saying that people many months in advance should make sure they can go to the lodging they want to
and
that in between transportation, and then if they want to wait until closer to their trip to buy a ticket, an air ticket, that works.
Yeah. So especially if you're traveling with multi-generational family and you've got, you know, greater than six people, I'd be plan now, plan early, plan often.
All right. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. And today we're talking about travel, both in the state and internationally. In the studio with me today is Scott McMurrin. Scott is the owner of Alaska Travelgram. Mandy Garcia is also with us. Mandy is the owner of Salmonberry Travel and Tours. And Jack Bonney is here. Jack is the VP of Communications for Visit Anchorage. What are you hearing about travel safety in Mexico right now? Recently, some Anchorage residents were in Mexico and said they had to stay at the hotel with little food because of safety concerns. What's the current situation? Scott?
You know, I've heard those same reports. But I've also heard from friends of mine who were along the coast north of Manzanillo, between Manzanillo and Puerto Vallarta, who said that it hasn't hit our town right now. La Manzanilla was the place. The most dangerous part there is the crocodiles that they feed and house in a park there. That's a wild tip. Crocodiles in La Manzanilla. No swimming.
Okay.
Okay. But I, you know, you know, mostly along that western coast, Puerto Vallarta, Mazatlan, and that area, Sayulita. But I also heard that there were problems all across the country.
Mm.
And, you know, I don't have any specific guidance currently. It's not certainly been eclipsed by issues in the Middle East.
Yeah.
You know, so if I was planning a trip to Mexico, I'd certainly want to tune in and find out what's going on. And I just renewed my travel insurance. Okay. So I buy an annual policy, and instead of getting it trip by trip, and your credit card may include some insurance products, but just this is a really good time. If you're going to travel, it's a really good time to get some travel insurance.
And we'll talk more about that later. But where should people go to get information on international travel advisories? Is that the State Department? Is there some place that they can easily find out where they should and should not travel right now?
So that's a really good question, Lori. And certainly state.gov is our official resource. However, I always provide an alternative source, which is less political, and that is the British Home Office. So see what the Brits are saying about a particular destination or region. It's just something to consider. And then also, in addition to those geopolitical issues, also the CDC for now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had good luck, and that's what my physician uses to find, current information on, vaccinations, inoculations. If I'm going to Africa or India or South America or Southeast Asia, what's the current guidance?
Mm-hmm. And are you suggesting, or are there areas internationally that you're saying to people, probably better not go there right now?
The Middle East.
Okay. Let's go to our email for a moment here. Harry writes, please ask your guest, I think it was Mandy, to further explain textable airline numbers, how to get the number and how does it work?
So if you go, I fly Alaska Airlines, so like religiously, so shout out to Alaska Airlines. But I will go on the website, and on the website, there's a chat option, and you can chat with that representative instead of calling the 800 number to be put on hold. If you do call the 1-800 number to be put on hold, they also have a callback option. However, I always feel like the calling option is rather delayed versus the texting option.
Interesting.
So,
okay, that's great information to have. And do you normally go right to the airline website to make your reservations?
Because I do everything in the app. Go on the app. It's so much easier.
But you're going right to the airline. You're not going through some
go direct.
Third party.
Oh my goodness! Please, please, please.
No.
Please go direct. Like, I can't stress that enough. If you have a travel delay, emergency, whatever, that airline can help you. If you see, I'm not going to say any websites, but we all know them, and it's $200 less, you got to think to yourself, why is it $200 less? Right? Like,
am I riding on the wing?
Well, and like, what kind of customer service comes with an online travel agency, right? So an OTA, an online travel agency.
And by that, those, you mean Expedia?
Right.
And Kayak?
And cheaptickets.com,
right,
or whatever.
Travelocity.
Exactly. Okay. All of that. I mean, you can get some ideas.
Ones that I use quite often.
Yeah. I think that's the trick of it is you have to kind of do the math of like, do you want the dollar savings? And I totally get that that's an enticing thing. Mm-hmm. Or do you want the surety that the ticket I have in my hand is booked through the company that I'm traveling with? And it just, when things, when you do hit one of those bumps in the road and your travel plans change, it's so much simpler to fix it if you've booked directly. Mm-hmm. So it's not to say you haven't saved money the other way, but it can take a long time to untangle those things, whether it be hotels or flights.
I would just share that, and this is, again, my own personal experience, that I often use, and this is when I'm shopping for airfares, okay? My secret sauce is Google Flights. Okay. And this is really based on my own personal experience. But I go there to track and identify sweet spots in terms of airfares and stuff like that. And then that will take me to the airline to
direct.
Boarding.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's a real important consideration. I was just booking train tickets in Italy, okay? I went.
As one does.
As one does.
I went to the train site in Italy. Impossible. Impossible. And this happened to me when I booked train tickets in Spain, too. I'm not making this up. And finally, my travel agent suggested the train line, which is a third party, you know, they can fix train and bus tickets all across Europe. And it worked flawlessly.
Oh, so sometimes that makes sense.
Well, but here's
the
other thing.
There's a difference. Yeah, there's a difference between an OTA, like TripAdvisor or Expedia or whatever, and a travel advisor.
Brick and mortar, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So, but what happened too is in, where were we? Sevilla. In southern Spain, and the train was delayed. And so I went up to, I said, can we fix this and get a different? Oh, no, you went on the train line. You'll have to call them. Mm-hmm. So here I am in Sevilla. It's like, well, what's their number? It's like looking at me like I'm from Mars. Mm-hmm. You know, not her problem.
Yeah.
And so there is that consideration.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, we've really had people book
cautionary note.
Like tours, right? Day tours from Anchorage. And from whatever.com site, walking into the office saying, like, can you help me? And I'm, like, looking at this confirmation going, I can't even find a phone number on here. So, you know, booking direct, not just airlines, but finding, you know, obviously a local company to show you a community is so much more valuable and worth the maybe a few extra dollars and peace of mind to support a community and support local.
And frankly, I have had a couple of times where booking directly can be the thing that actually saves you a little bit of money too. So if you're on an Airbnb or a VRBO and you find a place that you like, there's oftentimes a separate management company or a direct booking option for that same property. And in some cases, you can save a little bit of money that way because you're not going through that extra layer of people who are trying to make a buck. Mm-hmm. So I think it's always easier to start local wherever you're going and say, you know, I'm going to try and go as direct to the source as I can because then I know Mandy or I know Scott or I know the people at Visit Anchorage or wherever you're going.
Jack, I want to stay with you for a minute. I grew up in northern Wisconsin. I lived near Hayward, Wisconsin for a long time. And you can go online and see this. There is a giant muskie attraction in the city of Hayward that you can walk into and up through this big fish and appear in the mouth for classic, somewhat cheesy photos, tourist classic visitor pictures. So many people have gone there, but few locals. What do Alaskans miss that is in their backyard, so to speak, when it comes to great attractions that are overlooked by us local folks?
Oh, gosh, it is. I was thinking about this the other day, because when you live in a place, it becomes just kind of the daily grind. Like, you're going to get up, you're going to take care of the family, you're going to go to work, and you run the risk of this whole big state that we live in kind of just turning into a backdrop for just like your average everyday life. I tend to think of it a little bit like if you lived in New York and you've never been to the Empire State Building or the Statue of Liberty, all these things are in your backyard. And that's true for us as Alaskans too. So I think working at a visitor center, you're constantly reminded that our everyday is somebody's like best trip of a lifetime. Like when my kids are driving around and they're like, keep your eyes peeled for moose. And we're like visiting my family in the lower 48. Like this is so common to them that they don't realize that having this stuff in their backyard is an exceptional thing.
Like I've seen front yard.
Truly. Yeah. I've seen, you know, river boats going up the Talkeetna, like the entire boat shift to one side just because they point out that there was a beaver that was there. Like you can see the bite marks in the tree. Like that's not normal if you're from Delaware. And so just keeping that internalized is like, there's all this stuff in our backyard. And for me, I always just start with the question of like, what haven't I done yet that I've just been pushing off and pushing off and pushing off? And how do I make one of those things happen in the year ahead? You know, for me, and that doesn't have to be a summer specific thing either. Like we have as cold as it can be, like I need to get out and do some fat biking. I just haven't done enough of that. I should go and do that today before the snow melts. But then thinking through like, you know, having school age kids, I'm trying to figure out like, how can I do that stuff? But how can I do it where it's still at their level? I'm not just like putting them at the top of a mountain and saying, you figure it out. And for us, that's been like, where's a public use cabin that I haven't tried out yet? Or which trail haven't I hiked on yet? Or, you know, what overnight camping trip can I take them on where it's something that they haven't seen that's outside of their norm that gets them away from a Nintendo Switch? that just gives them a little bit of sense of this place, because they're people who are saving for their you know, trip of a lifetime. And this is like, we're already here.
Backyard.
We can do this stuff in our backyard.
Yeah. Mandy, how about you? Before we take a break, tell us about some of the local overnight fun places that you suggest for Alaskans to try.
I think that Jack made a good point about evaluating like your family's makeup and also your like reason to travel. So if you're looking for a quick overnight, like, you know, I've heard Alaskans say like, oh, I'm going to Denali for the night. I was like, well, I would not do that. It is so far away for one night. Like, I'm like, when I talk to visitors, I'm like, man, stay three nights and you will get to experience the Denali that people don't get to experience. So I would evaluate how your family makeup, how you like to travel. If there's an intent to travel, like you're a kayaking family, then you're going to want to go, you know, coastal, you know, Seward, Whittier, Homer, not for one night, but a great two night, three night destination. So I'd encourage locals to, you know, really, if you're going to do a staycation, stay the extra day, maybe take that day off of work, that, you know, either a Friday or a Monday, and make it a long weekend and kind of just slow down a little bit. As Alaskans, we'll like to like, oh, we're just going to shoot up to Denali and go and check it out and then come back. And I'm like, oh gosh, don't do that. Your family would regret that. You're going to miss all those pieces and points along the way. So my tip would be slow down and stay, you know, not just an overnight, but one more night.
Well, this makes a very good point too, is as Alaskans, we're so apt to jump for like, when I say staycation, I mean outdoors. And when I say staycation, I mean like, I'm still going to do a bunch of car travel, even though I don't need like that. It can be that, but just the same way, like there's a Moose Loop here in town and there's a 32 mile paved loop that I can go. Yes, it's on Scott's water bottle. This doesn't even require me to leave my zip code necessarily, or goes one zip code over, I guess. But just not jumping past the idea that there's other cool stuff really, really close to home, whether it's new exhibits at a museum or the work that the Alaska Native Heritage Center has done. If you haven't been out there in a couple of years, they've been open for 25 years, but they've done a lot of renovating and there's still more to come. So just remembering that you can see new things even in places that you may have checked off your list mentally a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Scott, anything you want to add there before we take a break?
Jack, you're talking about fat biking. It's like I got to get out there on Kinnick Glacier.
There you go.
I've got to get out there on the Kinnick Glacier. I mean, I got studs on. It's a fat bike for a fat boy. You know, I mean, I'm ready to go. That's the thing that's on my list, and I can't get it out of my head now.
There you go.
I love it.
Well, all right. On that note, we are going to take a break. We'll be back in a minute and continue our discussion about fun ideas for travel both in Alaska and outside of the state as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
I'm Shelby Herbert, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUAC, where I work in Fairbanks, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about travel plans, and we have travel experts in the studio with us today. Scott McMurrin is the owner of Alaska Travelgram. Mandy Garcia is the owner of Salmonberry Travel and Tours, and Jack Bonney is the VP of Communications for Visit Anchorage. Lucy writes, I would really like to know if you have any information on how to secure campsites. I have always been an outdoors woman and would just spontaneously pick my sites on the day I was traveling. However, since COVID, I have increasingly found sites not available. I have been forced to go online to try to reserve them. This has been confusing. You can no longer just pull over and camp anywhere you like. I've been told many times I have to leave in the middle of the night. Do you have information on sites that might be helpful?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so we play this game a lot because we want a public use cabin for the kids if we can get it. So recreation.gov. The state park system has something that they run. I find it's most helpful to figure out, like, what are the rules for each of these places? So, for example, if I'm booking in the National Forest Service system, they may open those cabins in advance for, and I'm guessing, I'm making this up because I don't remember which one's which anymore. But one, say, might open up 6 months in advance, and one might open up the entire calendar all at the same time. Oh. For the one out at Spencer Lake that the Alaska Railroad accesses in the summer, there's like a single day where their summer opens up, and it is just a madhouse to try and book that all at one time. So just learning the rules of like, when can I start looking for these cabins? And it's going to be different for, say, like the Eagle River Nature Center than it is for Arctic Valley, than it is for the National Forest Service or Chugach State Park.
So or for Katmai.
Yeah, absolutely. So just getting a sense of, in advance of your travel dates of how early can I book this if I want to, whether it's for a campsite or a cabin or an RV spot. And just kind of camping out. So for me, I have like little reminders set throughout the year or like at Thanksgiving time, I think, oh, this is the time where we usually start thinking about what am I going to be? Is there a cabin I want to book someplace? Just because it's not necessarily that I need 6 months to book it, but I do need to make those plans sooner rather than later to have all the options on the table, kind of like Mandy said earlier.
And I've heard of people like at midnight on, you know, the 1st of January, certain things are opening up and people are just sitting at their computer waiting to...
That's Katmai.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Katmai National Park. They've got the campground right there by the lodge, by Brooks Camp.
I will say, make friends online too, because there are a couple of social media groups where people with cabins that they can't or campsites that they can't use will say, hey, I thought I had an opportunity. I'm out of town or I travel or I'm sick or whatever. Does somebody else want this? Can we trade? Can I? So there are opportunities sometimes to kind of snap those things up last second if you know where to look. And a lot of those groups are active on like Facebook.
All right. That's great advice. Let's go to the phones for a moment. Joe is in Anchorage. Hello.
Good morning. Scott, both of the boys were talking about flat tire biking.
Yes.
Are you still there?
Yep.
And I tried to do that Sunday as part of the tour of Anchorage. Did the ski first, and then I was going to, because they don't allow old people, that's a euphemism, to do the double anymore where you ski and then you bike, because it's only if you want to go 50 kilometers on your skis, 50 kilometers on your bike, can't do that in the time allotted. But I went up to Hilltop, tried to go down the single track trail, Scott, don't do it till they pack them down.
Right. Right.
A foot of snow. So I had to reverse field and go down all the wonderful Muni plowed trails to get home.
The freeway.
25K. And it worked, but wait a bit to go out till the snow settles.
But my travel. Did you have a question, Joe?
Yeah, there is a question. My wife and I have different tolerances for travel at this point. I love to go places and international or go surfing, do adventure type traveling. And she's not into that as much anymore as she used to be. We're more family oriented to go visit our lone granddaughter. But how would you recommend that people amicably reconcile their travel tolerances when they're different?
Wow, what an excellent question, yeah. Joe, because, as people age or things change in your life, you may come to very, very different ideas about what a vacation should look like.
Yeah.
Mandy, you
I'm so excited you answered or you asked this question, because we have a Northern Lights getaway tour that starts in Anchorage and ends in Fairbanks. And there's obviously it's Aurora based, and it's out of many partners' comfort zone. So usually it's like one person decides like, I'm going on this trip. And then the other one is a little more timid and nervous, and they're there for their partner. And so as a guide, we kind of have to balance that. And my favorite thing to do, in your case, for example, would be like, if she wants to see the grandkids and you want to surf, do a destination family trip, right? Where you're going to the coast and the grandkids, meet you there.
Mm.
And same with, if you're looking at, traveling in Alaska and you want to be more active, and maybe she wants to, read a book or enjoy the spa or, just hang out and just be with family, is get the location that she wants and the activities that you want. So if you're very activity centric, you know, drive the boat with the activity, because then you can get the best activity. And then secondly, look and see, okay, where can we stay that she and the kids are going to be the most comfortable? And it's a win-win. So when you travel plan, you want to make sure that you have everyone's like number one in their head. Like, So when people come to Alaska, what do you think of when you think of Alaska? Like, what is that picture in your head? What do you want to experience when you're here? And then we take into considerations everyone's wants. So if she was, say you didn't live in Alaska, you're coming up to Alaska, or you're going to travel to Alaska and other places, you want to try surfing in Seward. And then I would say, in that case, then let's get you a really cute little cabin on the coast and make sure it's kid friendly and near the playground. And, make sure to include like, hey, you got to stop off and get ice cream with the kids one day. So, you know, travel plan that way.
That's such great advice. Thank you so much for that, Joe. Good luck making those combined plans in the future. I wanted to discuss the merger of Alaska Airlines and Hawaiian Airlines. What changed regarding, I'm seeing some looks exchanged here. What changed regarding travel perks, and what do Alaskans need to know about their mile programs and other incentives?
You're looking at me, Lori.
I'm looking at you, Scott.
Yeah. Well, so the merger of Alaska and Hawaiian announced back in December of 2024 when I was wrestling with those train reservations in Sevilla. It's been a work in progress. It started as a work in progress. It continues to be a work in progress. specifically, with regard to the mileage program, it's now points. And I think it's fair to say that the center of gravity with respect to the loyalty plan has shifted from airline to credit card. This is all a big credit card ploy. They've shuffled the deck significantly. And so your loyalty is in many respects a function of your credit card spend. And that's just something people are still wrestling with. People are saying that they're confused. That's why, in my opinion. And so that's one aspect of it. It is a big, big job. And so in addition to the loyalty plan, which is kind of the touch point for many travelers, there's also fleet management. There's also labor groups. There's also, where are we going to fly? And, look what they've done with the 787s that were on order from Hawaiian Airlines. They've moved them to Seattle. They're flying to Rome, to London, to Tokyo and Seoul. I mean, I have somebody who's wanted to go from Honolulu to Seoul on Hawaiian, but they take them back through Seattle now. It's like, no, that's not going to work. So things are changing.
There was a Washington Post travel piece in the Anchorage Daily News yesterday with the headline, "Why Do Airlines Hate Basic Economy Passengers?" Quite a headline. It was all about travel points, miles, how many big carriers are dropping basic economy benefits. One travel writer compared the carriers to a bad boyfriend whose affections you try to win over. "We're going to treat you really badly, so give us more money and we promise we will treat you better," allegedly channeling the carriers. There are so many different carve-outs depending on the airline. What should people know about this? Do the airlines really hate economy travelers?
I don't know. I
not speaking for the airlines.
I don't think Alaska Airlines hates me. And I'm going to say Alaska Airlines because I am one of the loyal, I think that's why the point system works for me, because I am very dedicated to one airline. I don't think that works for everybody, but I'd like to think they don't hate me. However, I love the upgrades because now I'm spending my money on my credit card, so I have a better chance of getting my upgrade. So I don't know a good answer for that.
I've got kind of a narrow view on this because I, working at the visitor center, I obsess with like, what's our air capacity coming into Anchorage? But remember that those planes fly both ways, so we can take advantage of it. It feels like in the year ahead, we're going to have an increase in capacity. And some of that is a response to more cruise capacity and continuing demand. But I don't think I have a hard time squaring the idea of like you don't like your passengers when you're also building more capacity for those same passengers. So it feels like anytime we get another flight, or somebody says, hey, this was an existing route, but I'm going to fly it three times a week instead of two, or I'm going to take this 737 and swap it out for an aircraft that has a couple more seats in it. I feel like that is those carriers doing the math and saying it makes sense to add a little bit more volume around the edges. And the good news is when those planes fly up, we get to fly them the other direction sometime too. So anytime we're building new routes or we've got a new connection or increased frequency, I think everybody benefits as Alaska.
That makes sense. It really does. Let's take another quick break and we'll come back and continue our discussion about summer, spring, winter travel.
Hi, I'm Avery Elfelt, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media, KHNS, where I work in Haines, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, on Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing travel and all the things you need to know about travel, both in the state, outside of the state, and around the world. We had an email saying, after retiring, I have become quite familiar with Alaska's ferry system. It's cheap, easy to access. I load my car, my dogs, head out for the week to different places. I'm headed to Kodiak in June, and the trip will cost me $500 round trip. I went to Cordova last year for about the same amount of money. The ferry is beautiful. The sights are amazing. And it's really cheap, especially if you're retired. That's really interesting advice. Do you have packages that you offer to people for ferry trips?
I would say the ferry is great for independent travelers. The schedule will be released in the spring, so it's a little more difficult for guests that are traveling very far out in advance. However, you can get a good idea of next year's schedule by looking at this year's schedule. So for those of you that want to put together a package, that would be my advice to you, is to look at it in advance this summer so you can see for next summer's plans.
I've traveled on the ferry both to Cordova and to Kodiak, and it's great. The secret, the X factor is the schedule. And they've had real problems with the fleet, and I got a notice that the Kennecott's going to be tied up this summer because they can't find staff. So the real issue is the schedule, and you know, past performance is no guarantee of future results, so keep our fingers crossed for that schedule.
All right, let's go back to the phones for a moment. Roberta is in Kodiak. Hello.
Hello. I have a quick question about international travel, and I wonder if it's advisable to have paper coupons in your hand for tickets, or can you trust the electronic systems?
All right. Thank you for the question.
Scott? Always print my boarding pass at home.
I always go app.
I'm a 100%. Minimalist, but for big trips, I'll usually fudge it and do both. I really like the convenience of being able to show something on a screen, but every once in a while, I have to go rifling through, you know, a little bucket of papers in my backpack. Uh-huh. So for big trips, I'm more inclined to have paper stuff. It's just nice to be able to find that reference number quickly, not worry about whether you're connected to Wi-Fi. So for big international trips, I'd consider it. For something more local, I'm kind of at the point where if it can live in my phone, I'm okay with that.
So funny, because for years when electronic tickets first started, I was like, oh no, I want that ticket in my hand. Now I love the convenience of, you know, just scanning. But I think it makes sense if you're in another country where your phone, I was stuck in Mexico City with a non-working phone by myself, and boy, that's not fun. So I think maybe having some paper backup when you're traveling to places that you're not familiar with, or you're not familiar with communication system, might be a good idea. Roberta, good luck with your travel, and it's probably a good idea to have some backup if you're traveling internationally. Thanks for the call. Let's go stay with the phones for a moment. Christy is also in Kodiak. Hi, Christy.
Hi, good morning. I'd like to have some information about, I live in Kodiak, so I'd like to find some information on how to get a hold of the train and make find out what the schedule is for the summer and see what you can do. I'd like to go with my family up there and just kind of check out the train ride.
All right.
So, Scott. Christy, I assume you're talking about the Alaska Railroad?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Okay. Yes. All right. I just wrote a story about that. You know, the easiest thing to find out on the schedule is go to alaskarailroad.com. But there are many different kind of variations on that theme, and there are many different ways to experience it, and you kind of got to feel your way through that.
For what it's worth, my favorite trip is still down along Turnagain Arm. So you come into Anchorage, you leave Anchorage going southbound, you get all of Cook Inlet on the way. I like to go, depending on your ability level, either out to the Spencer Glacier whistle stop. So it's the one of the few places going southbound where you get off the train pulls away, and you've basically got this big glacial lake to yourself. Anybody who got off the train is with you, and anybody else is going to like helicopter in. Like it's that. And it's so close.
It's beautiful.
It's just a gorgeous place. If you're not up for a walk or a kayak or, you know, an expedition, if you stay on the train and go out to Grandview, there's a reason they call it Grandview. I mean, it's a beautiful place to be on the train. And obviously, you know, that's just maybe the shortest bite-sized trip you can take on the Alaska Railroad. Obviously, you can go all the way to Fairbanks, all the way south to Seward and to Whittier. But that one, for me, that's one of my favorite trips on the railroad.
And it's the train. I love trains. It's so fun just to ride
the train. The Seward trip is really cool.
Absolutely.
And you can do that in one day.
Ah. We have some advice from Susan, and I'm going to ask Susan if she's still listening to let us know, does she mean Alaska Airlines or American Airlines? Susan writes, we need to be careful with booking with AA. What I thought was AA was a scam outfit. We booked with someone who said he was a contractor, but when the flights were later canceled because of the door plug incident, we weren't informed and almost lost our mileage. We were on the phone a long time with the real AA and finally got it straightened out. Also had a hard time with travel insurance, and Scott helped them out. So, Susan, if you could send back a quick note and let us know if you're talking about Alaska Airlines or American Airlines, that would be great.
Mandy, that sounds a lot like Alaska Airlines.
It does. Okay, well, maybe that's what she meant then.
I think maybe this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, but as much as you can do your homework and find that direct source, whether it be the phone number, I think it benefits everybody when you're dealing directly with the company that you're working with.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense.
Point of order. it's really deceptive when you do a Google search. Mm. You put in there Alaska Airlines customer service. All manner of spoofers come up.
Oh gosh.
And you think you're talking to they present themselves as official representatives. In fact, they may be quote unquote travel agents, but it doesn't end well. Mm. And so one must be really judicious in finding that direct link.
Yep.
Well, that's really important to find the actual website. Here's a question from Anna in Homer, who asks, she has two questions. Is there a secret window to purchase the best priced airline tickets within? I've heard more than 2 weeks and within 3 months of your travel date. Is that true? And then secondly, she says, I've noticed ticket prices go up when I'm searching for flights over time on the same site, like Alaska Air. Is it true the airline tracks your searches and the prices adjust based on your prevalence of searches? Oh, Scott.
This is a very common question. In fact, there are always big stories written up about when the best time to purchase your ticket. Okay? And the reason they keep asking is because people keep asking that question and there is no answer. Okay? I mean, generally, for our own peace of mind, I think, you know, 2 weeks to 6 weeks is a good time. But, for example, I'm planning later in the summer, geopolitical events take their course, and for my own peace of mind, I go ahead and book it, lock it in, so I don't have to worry about it. It just depends on how much of a game of chicken do you want to spend. Mm-hmm. With respect to do airlines track my search, okay, this is a reason to use Google Flights, because Google doesn't care. They've got your eyeballs on their site. They don't care how many times you search a particular...
Are you saying that airlines do that? They track your searches?
I've never had it happen to me, but my wife has, okay? And so... You know, they track everything all the time.
I think it can also feel like they're tracking. If you wait just a little bit, somebody else is looking for that same ticket too.
Mean somebody so it's
possible that they could be doing that. It's also possible that by waiting a little bit, you're just seeing more of that plane book up and the price rising because they've set it so that those last couple of seats are a little bit more expensive. If you can, and you have a refundable ticket and you purchase a refundable ticket, the other game that you can start to play, as long as you know that you can cancel that first ticket, is to book it when you think the time is right, when you know you're going, so that you have something, peace of mind, and then just check back every once in a while and see if there's a deal to be had by canceling that very important refundable ticket that you've purchased and rebooking. Sometimes you can play that game too.
All right. Susan writes back, yes, it was Alaska Airlines. So we've confirmed that. We're getting close to the end of top of the hour, but we have a few more questions here. Kim, in also another person in Homer. I've heard that when you search flights online, the more you search, the higher the price goes, like the search engines. Oh, another question about search engines programmed to increase the price if you search frequently. It kind of sounds like that's not really known if that's happening or...
Well, we can also, on the Google Flights, you can also track a flight. So if it's a flight route that you're interested in, they'll send you an email. And you can say how often you want the email notification sent to you. And again, because Google Flights goes directly to the airline, as soon as you see the, you know, I think it's like a green arrow going down, which means like, hey, this is a good time to buy. This is cheaper or less expensive than normal. So then you can go directly to that website or that airline's website to book that.
So in that case, you are doing the tracking. And
right.
Technology occasionally works in our favor, too.
Yeah, there you go. Here's another question from Polly. Just curious about what knowledgeable travelers do regarding having usable cell phones while out of the country. As I mentioned earlier, got to Mexico City all alone, missed my flight. There I was, no phone.
We usually advise guests to reach out to their carrier to, you know, just see what the carrier map is. And then you also know, you know, do I have to buy additional coverage if I'm going internationally? Like maybe for $10, then your phone would have worked, right? For $10 a day or $4 a day or whatever it is.
And I think this has changed quite a bit in the last like 10 to 15 years, where it used to be a much bigger deal of, am I going to have to buy like a burner card or switch SIM cards or do all this stuff? And it still varies a lot by where you're going on the globe. But I think it's become a little bit more seamless. Traveling in Europe, it feels like it's becoming a lot easier to just say, hey, I'm going to buy an international plan for a couple of months, where it may be a completely different thing if you're going to like Asia, where it's from my limited research, a place like Japan, it may be simpler to just like go into a 7-Eleven, buy a SIM card, buy a quick phone and use it that way. So I think it's going to vary depending on where you're going to.
Sure, makes sense. Scott, you have an event coming up real soon, a couple weeks. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I do. It's over at the Native Heritage Center. They've redone it. It's really nice. It's called the Alaska Summer Showcase, and where we get all of our favorite Alaska travel people together, like Jack.
We'll be there.
And we give away, you know, about $25,000 or $30,000 worth of prizes. Our grand prize is Alaska Airlines Fly Internationally. So you can win a ticket to Japan or Rome or something like that. But we've got, you know, 24 prizes, and we've got Alaska Native dancers and live music. And so AlaskaSummerShowcase.com.
Okay. And in our final minute here, sorry to ask this in the final minute, but in March 17th through the 19th, the 11th Annual Heritage and Cultural Tourism Conference will be held in Sitka at Centennial Hall. Do you work with indigenous tour operators in Alaska, and do you get a lot of requests for those types of tours? Mandy?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's actually one of my favorite conferences to participate in as a tour operator. It links tour operators and local small businesses to showcase cultural tourism. So it's a wonderful event that's put on annually, and it changes destinations, but Sitka is the home of. And so we do. I mean, I think that sets Alaska apart from the rest of the Arctic and the destinations in the world.
Yeah, you see a huge amount of appetite growing for all things local. And for us, I think that's indigenous tourism. So whether it be the Alaska Native Heritage Center or the Anchorage Museum, but also all of the wayfinding signage that's coming to downtown Anchorage, the Indigenous Place Names Project, the statue of Grandma Olga down at Ship Creek. I think this is becoming a little bit more easily accessible for people, and it's something that they want anyway. So it just makes sense to integrate that into the experience of being in Anchorage, both for us as residents and for people who are visiting.
Well, thank you so much. This was a great hour. Thanks to my guests, Scott McMurrin with Alaska Travelgram, Mandy Garcia, owner of Salmonberry Travel and Tours, and Jack Bonney, VP of Communications for Visit Anchorage. Thanks to our engineer, Crystal Hyde. Our producer and editor is Andy Feit today, and on the phones, Wesley Early helped us out. This has been Talk of Alaska. We'll be back next week. I'm Lori Townsend. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.